Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today's guest is John Gasperi. He's a recently retired corporate executive that is now busier than ever writing, speaking, and teaching seminars. His new book, Otherwise Engaged, talks about how leaders can get a firmer grip on employee engagement and other key intangibles. So let's get right to it. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. You know, I understand that you've recently retired from the corporate world, as they say, and you're keeping busy, though. You wrote a book. Tell me a little bit about it.
The book is about, as you said, employee engagement. And in essence, where it came from is that over the last several years, there has been a lot of research done about this topic, and by several groups, the Hay Group, Gallup, the Corporate Executive Board, and they're all finding a similar thing, which is that when organizations have higher levels of employee engagement, they're finding strong positive correlations with improved business results. And these are serious, hard-edged business results measured along dimensions like productivity, efficiency, market share, and one dimension that's of special interest, I think, to your listeners, which is employee retention rates. So that's good. Better even is that a lot of organizations, therefore, are investing significant amounts of time and money in programs and initiatives designed to increase engagement rates, which, again, is also a very good thing. The problem is the results they're getting tend to be disappointing. And in some cases, the result can even be the case that it's done damage. The way they've gone about it has caused engagement levels to go down. So what I've tried to do in this book is to, in as simple and straightforward terms as possible, help people get a better understanding of why is it that many of the traditional approaches to engagement come up short and what they might be able to do about it. That's the Cliff Notes version.
Well, you know, you talk about retention, and right now, certainly with the market being the way it is and employers now having to deal with the fact that employees are beginning to have more power in the marketplace, there has been a shift certainly in the last 6 months where we're seeing employers not having the same power they used to have because employees with great talent, though they're always in demand, employers are having a harder time finding great talent. So it's starting to shift an employee market. The retention portion has seemed to receive a little bit more take and play here, right? It's really that companies are getting concerned that their top talent, which over the last few years of retention has not been a concern because people haven't really gone anywhere or done anything because of the economy, now they may be starting to look. They may be starting to think about going a different direction. Do you think that's part of the, you know, the concern that employers are now having?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you say, that when employees don't have options, then people can be fooled into thinking that things are well. But as soon as things get a little better, people do begin to have options. And who are the people who have the most options? Precisely the people that you'd less like to lose. The best people tend to have the most options. Those are the people you'd like to retain. And when those employees aren't engaged, they're going to be more inclined to start looking.
According to a modern survey, survey that recently came out, and we had Don McPherson. Yeah, Don McPherson was on the show. He was talking about the fact that his survey, which has been done for a number of years now, is showing some of the highest engagement by people across the board, mainly because they believe that we're seeing the top talent remaining in organizations due to the recession, and we're really seeing great people engaged. Are you seeing in your research, having to do with the book and the things you're doing, an opportunity for companies to build upon that and make successful engagement even more powerful than it ever has been in the past?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for one thing, is Gallup just came out. They just published the results. They do an annual survey on engagement levels, and I believe about 2 weeks ago they published their results for 2014, and the results are mixed. That engagement levels overall are up a tick or two. They're up to about a third, like 32%. 32% employees would describe themselves as being engaged, and that's a little higher than it had been. However, a couple of caveats on that. One is that the percentage of people who describe themselves as being highly engaged is the lowest Gallup has ever seen, and the cohort that has the lowest engagement scores are millennials. That'd probably be very little surprise to anybody listening in your audience.
Why do you think that millennials especially have not connected with employers like, you know, and I recognize that age is part of it. I do recognize that. But what is it that employers really need to think about to change the way they're doing engagement to capture this important group that's really going to take over the market within the next 20 years?
Yeah, I think that the change that needs to take place is employers need to sit back and think about what do we really mean by engagement, and is the engagement that is being talked about in the research, the various research, including Gallup's, is that the same engagement that we are trying to foster in our organization, or is it defined in the same way? And I think, sadly, too often the answer is no, it's not. So there is a strong tendency, and quite an understandable tendency, for leaders and organizations to want to take action, to want to do things. That's perfectly understandable and perfectly admirable and perfectly sensible. What I see as the challenge here, however, is that the issue isn't what do I do as much as it's what is informing the decisions I make. And if I could go into, if it would be okay to go into a little bit about the definition of engagement and where I see this gap that can occur.
I think that's absolutely appropriate. Absolutely. Let's talk to the audience about how you define it. Absolutely.
Okay. The word engagement is a very common word, and it generally means, it generally connotes some sort of interaction or connection. So, you know, you will hear it said that gears are said to engage in a transmission, or opposing armies on the battlefield are said to engage. And even in a business context, when leaders think, well, we need more engagement, what the mental model they have in their head is we need more connection and interaction. So that model will lead them to say, well, we need things like all-hands meetings so that there could be more interaction. And as part of that all-hands meeting, maybe we want to make sure that breakout sessions are included, and that'll increase interaction and connection levels. And by doing those things, we have addressed engagement. The problem, I think, is that while that's a perfectly sensible use of the word, it's not the engagement that the research is talking about. The various sources of the research, they'll have slightly different definitions. But one way or another, they all say that engagement is, again, allowing for slight differences. The way I define engagement is the extent to which an individual invests additional energy and effort on the tasks at hand.
That's a very simple definition of exactly correct what it is.
Right. And yet, if you think about it, it's engagement properly, and I'm going to use the term properly understood, and by that I mean the engagement that's being talked about in the research, because that's the thing that is enticing leaders to want to do this. They see the business gains that can be made, and they want to achieve those gains. But the definition that's associated with the research, extent to which people invest additional energy and effort, that's inherent in the person, him or herself. That's less what the leader might do, and more the focus needs to be on the effect that it has on the individual. I'll often, when I teach classes or workshop seminars on this sort of thing, there's a couple of thought experiments that I like to use. I think they might be helpful to try here. Would that make sense?
Absolutely, please.
All right, I'm going to use you as a guinea pig here, so if that's okay. Think of you arriving for a day on the job, and on that day, everything that happens to come across your desk, it's important and necessary to do, and you recognize, yep, this is part of my job, and I will do it to the best of my abilities. But let's suppose that everything that comes across your desk that day is fairly rote and routine and maybe some kind of administrative matters that are necessary to attend to. But you've done this all 1,000 times. You can kind of do it in your sleep. You do it, and you do it diligently. But that's all that you've done for the entire 8 or 9 or 10 hours on the job. the question I'd ask for you at the end of a day like that, David, well, first off, how fast does the time go on a day like that?
That's a trick question, isn't it?
Generally speaking, people will say that the time passes very slowly.
Yeah, of course it does.
That's the whole point.
Of course, it's very slow.
And at the end of that day, also, what's your energy level like?
Oh, pretty well.
Pretty well. All right, now let's think of a different day. Maybe the next day you come into work, and the things you're working on are also very important, very much in your job description. But there are things that you recognize that are really especially important to the business. They're especially important and right in your wheelhouse in terms of things that you like and are good at doing. Moreover, in order to do those tasks that day, you're going to have to stretch some creative muscles that maybe you haven't had a chance to stretch in a while. How fast is time going to go on that day?
Oh, too fast. Not enough time to get it done.
It's going
to fly by. That's right.
And you're going to look at your watch or the clock on the wall at the end of the day and say, where'd the day go? You might even make a mental note, I'm going to go in a little early tomorrow because I want to get a head start on this. What's your energy level like at the end of
much
the day?
Much higher. Much higher.
Very high. And yet, think about that. On the first day, in terms of the pure physics of it, you might well have burned fewer calories of energy doing the work than you did on the second day, right?
Absolutely.
Just because of the nature of it. And yet, your energy level was higher on the second day, so the question becomes, where did that energy come from? And the answer is it somehow came from within, that you had these stores of latent energy, potential energy, that something about the circumstances that obtained on that second day caused that potential energy to be transformed into applied energy. That's what engagement is, and that's what it feels like. And it is, and the problem is, even as I'm saying this now, I'm literally waving my arms in the air because it is intangible. It's very hard to pin down, but we all know that it exists. And so that's kind of what we're trying. That's why you mentioned the subtitle of my book is How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. Well, there's actually a footnote to the subtitle. If nothing else, it's the longest title that you'll see. And the footnote says, if that is, it were possible to get a grip on something that's intangible. I think that is very much at the heart of the challenge that we're facing, is that it is intangible. We know we need to do something about it, but it's very hard to get traction on. So that gives people a feel for what engagement is. Let me try one more quick thought experiment.
And we're going to be right back with that quick thought and experiment on the next segment for the HR Power Hour. You're listening on WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking to John Gasperi. He is the author of Otherwise Engaged, a new book about how leaders can get a firmer grip on employee engagement and other key intangibles. John, before we went on break, you talked about what engaged feels like. Now we're going to talk about what engagement looks like. So provide us that example you were about ready to tell us.
Okay. Imagine that you're in a conference center and there are two adjacent rooms, room A and room B at a conference center. And you could kind of slyly sneak into the back of the room to observe what's going on. So
that sounds like I normally do that every time I go to a conference, but that's fine. Continue. Yes, all right.
Okay. Imagine that in room A, what you see are, in each of the four corners of the room, there's a table set up with a half a dozen or so people sitting around the table, and adjacent to each table is a flip chart and another person with a marker. And so at each of these four pods, if you will, people are talking. Occasionally the person with the marker will write something on the flip chart. The people at the tables, maybe they're equipped with sticky notes, and they'll write something on a sticky note and every now and then put it on the flip chart, or maybe on a piece of butcher block paper that's on the wall next to them. If it's a particularly sophisticated meeting, they may even have colored dots that they can use for multi-voting and all that.
Woo! Colored dots. Yeah. Love colored dots.
So
go ahead.
We're really getting sophisticated here.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening in that room. In room B, the room is set up auditorium style, and there are, let's say, 48 people seated, center aisle, 24 people on each side. In the front of the room is a person standing at a podium talking, and behind him is a screen onto which are projected PowerPoint slides. So the question I'll often ask groups is, in which room are people more engaged? And if you want to try answering, David, go ahead. Otherwise, I can.
Well, no, I would say, I mean, the initial reaction would be the one where the groups are in small groups talking,
right,
and creating and writing, because obviously they're smaller groups make for better engagement typically, so that's why. But, you know, they could have you as speaking up there and really be lighting up the Christmas tree, right?
Well, maybe not me, but maybe somebody who could. But I'll pose that question. I've used that example for years with in hundreds and hundreds of sessions and literally thousands of people, and I've yet to have someone say room B. Generally speaking, about 70% will say room A, 30% won't say anything because 30% of people in sessions like that just don't answer. But I'll sometimes be able to see somebody who looks like they want to say something. I'll draw them out, and the answer they will typically give is, doesn't it depend? And I think that's exactly the right answer, because superficially, yes, in room A, people are working in breakouts, so of course they're more engaged. And in room B, there's someone standing at just speaking to them. And yes, if in the breakout group they're working on something that's important to the business and important to them, and from past experience they know that when they come out, typically these breakout sessions will end with a group making a recommendation to a review board or a leadership team. From past experience, they know they will truly be listened to. Their recommendations might not be taken, but they will know they have been heard, they will have been listened to. If in room B the speaker is just kind of droning about something that's not all that important and he's not terribly skillful, then yes, certainly, room A, the people will be more engaged. But if, in fact, the person in room B is talking about something that is of importance to the people in the room and the topic is important, and, moreover, the speaker is coming at it in a way that is forcing them to go active mentally. You may not be able to see them, but mentally they're now, the wheels are beginning to turn, because he's forcing them to challenge some assumptions they've made, to think about things that they might have thought of as long since settled in a new light, and maybe they'll think, I might want to rethink this sort of thing. And maybe he even is skillful enough to be able to hold the attention of a room full of people sitting in those kind of molded plastic chairs that one generally finds at, you know, the DMV or in a bus station. Then they're going to be pretty engaged in that room. If back in room A, the group is asking themselves, why are we doing this? Didn't we just do this 6 months ago? And even if we do this, we know we're not going to be listened to. The engagement levels are lower. And I think the lesson to be drawn from this, and it's very much related to the first experiment about how it felt to be engaged, the lesson to be drawn in this is, engagement is not what's happening inside a room. It's what's happening inside the heads and the hearts of the people who are inhabiting that room. And it's that distinction that is really, really easy to lose sight of. And it can become way too easy to say, we need to get our people engaged, let's put them in breakouts, and then check off the box, engagement has been taken care of. As opposed to thinking, who are these other people we're trying to reach? What, in fact, will move them to invest more time and energy? And putting the thought and the time and the attention into that before we just go off and do our mechanical solutions to what is inherently a problem of the, if I might get a little poetic, a problem of the spirit and the soul. And I think it's important to keep those distinctions in mind. Is this making sense?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is you said a couple of key things, which is, one, it's about the individual, not about the group. It's about, can you get the individual in that room to engage? And you also made the statement about 30% don't really, you know, participate, don't really move typically in a group. When I think about HR leaders trying to get a new process, a new thought process, a new culture change, a new something that they're going to be doing, or a new initiative, for lack of a better word, that they're trying to get across, they face the challenge of, do they do this in a group setting? Do they do this in small groups? Do they do this individually? And sometimes they do run into the challenge of time constraints, or, you know, ease and convenience, or just times, especially if it's manufacturing, you only have so much downtime that you can do. Yet it really does matter what they do and how they do it to engage that person. And isn't it more about trying to figure out through the manager which one is more effective for that particular group and person?
It absolutely is. It does have to do with who the individuals are, who the individual people are, and what the collective, if you will, culture of the group is. Can I go back to something you said
sure.
and pick a small fight with it?
Sure, go ahead.
You said,
oh, I like it's, this.
It's a good thing we're not in the same room. No, you said to do the things necessary for people to engage. I would say engagement is not an action that someone takes. Engagement is the result of other things. It's more of a, if you will, a psychological state in which someone exists. Not to do the things necessary to engage someone or necessary for someone to be engaged. It's to do the things that create the environment in which people will become engaged. Do you see the difference?
I understand your distinction. However, and I think, you know, one of the things that was interesting, we on the previous show last week had Joy Rothschild. She is the Chief Human Resource Officer for Omni Hotels on the show. And she talked about culture in her development of a garden, and she used a full analogy of culture. And she makes it very clear that if you can't engage in what we do and what it is that the processes that we put in place and that the belief from internally that you have to service the guests and service of that, you need to be pruned. Right? And be...
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
So there is an element of creating a culture, creating an environment that is right for you to get engaged in, and it's your choice to or not to do that, but you can't simply change a training of everything and everyone to simply make sure that every individual person is developed if you can't provide the time, dollars, and development of that. There is some self, if you want to call it, self-personal, self-responsibility in this as well, is there not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the way I like to frame this is that engagement is the result of other things having been done well, and it all starts with respect. Now, let me, again, this discussion and my book, it's all about definitions. The premise of the book is that if we take a little time and step back and be a little mindful of the words we're using and what they mean and how we use them, that in itself can deliver a big chunk of improvement in terms of having a better understanding of the nature of the beast that we're trying to wrestle to the ground here. So I think it all starts with respect. The action that needs to be taken is to infuse more respect into the organization, as a result of which people will become more engaged. Now, let me go back and define respect. The definition of respect that I like to offer, and there's a whole chapter about this in the book, is respect is giving due consideration to the other. Now, let me unpack that a bit. It is on the other. You've already mentioned that. It's about the other person. It's not what I do. It's what effect does it have on him or her. That's point one. Consideration is just that. Did you stop to consider it? It doesn't mean you have to bend over backwards. It doesn't mean you have to change your company's strategic plan in order to accommodate person A or person B. It just meant, did you stop and think about the effect of what you said, what you said or didn't say and did or didn't do on the other? And a key word in that whole phrase is due, D-U-E, giving due consideration to the other. So Up to a point, yes. Who's the other? Am I really thinking through what will move him or her? But you're right. If it's a person who simply, for whatever the reasons, doesn't want to be here or shouldn't be here, then no, you don't give any more consideration to that because you have a business to run. And you, so that's, there's a lot packed into that word do.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we're talking with John Gasperi. He is the author of Otherwise Edged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. You know, John, you're talking about respect, and I think there is an element that goes both ways on that, right? Respect for the employer and respect for the employee. Both sides of that is absolutely critical. And what you're really talking about is perception as well, because perception is the mother of reality, as I like to say, because, you know, perception is reality, or is how I perceive in what you're doing is the right, and you're taking good care of me, and you're allowing me to engage. At the same time, I want to engage because I want to do right for you, because it's really about the person more than the organization sometimes, because you work for a boss, you don't work for a company. You know, tell me about your take on that as well.
Well, it is true that there is a reciprocal requirement on the part of the employee that respect is, that's one of the reasons I like to emphasize respect, because what happens too often is when organizations want to run an engagement initiative or an engagement program, right off the bat, I get concerned. And it does begin to feel like it's the next big thing, and there's posters and logos and all the stuff that goes with that. And it costs money, and it takes time. Respect is something that everybody in an organization can infuse into that organization 25 times every day. And they don't need a program, they don't need a slogan, they don't need permission. So absolutely, that just, I used the example earlier about people in a breakout session maybe saying to themselves, didn't we just do this? You know, this is all going to be a waste of time. Well, that's being disrespectful to the other people in the room. It's being disrespectful to the boss whose idea it was to have the breakout session. Instead of assuming good faith, it's very easy to get cynical and get jaded, and that's just poisonous in an organization. So everybody has the responsibility to manifest that kind of respect up, down, sideways, all through the organization. So absolutely, as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons I think that the notion of respect is a powerful one, because it assumes reciprocity. Everybody has a stake in this. Everybody has a responsibility to do it.
No, you're absolutely correct. And that's what makes a successful environment, a successful organization, and a successful culture, because engagement drives, you know, it drives the business forward. And this is something that, you know, is critical to an organization. And we've talked a lot about it on the show because it really is that important. And what I like about your book is the fact that it really tries to break it down into what I call reality, because reality is important. Sometimes, as you said, there are these big initiatives. Sometimes it's just as simple as it should be simple.
The whole notion of initiative burnout, I mean, the very fact of launching one of these things, if you're not careful, that can lead to disengagement, because people who've been there, you can almost hear the eye rolling begin. Like, this is this year's big thing. What'll next year's be? And while that's not good, that cynicism is never good, that will affect other people on the job. People will look to someone who's been there for several years. Maybe some big initiative has been launched, and a new person will look to a more senior person, and the more senior person might say, don't worry, this too shall pass.
That's right. You know, the flavor of the month, the flavor of the year. Yeah. And don't worry. We too shall get through this. Don't worry.
Yep.
You're absolutely right.
Really simple thing that I recommend to people when the notion of engagement in the sense of the research, instead of using the term engagement, use a term which is a real close synonym. Use buy-in. And the reason I say that is that if you use buy-in, you can't run into the trap that says, I'm going to engage you. Because you wouldn't say, I'm going to buy in you. And it forces you to think the buy-in is the end state. Engagement is the end state that obtains with the person. You may do certain things in order to create engagement, but engagement is something that resides within the person, just as buy-in resides in the person. But the term buy-in doesn't leave you open to that confusion. So that's just one simple way of looking at it that can help avoid some of this confusion.
That's a great tip. And we're talking with John Gasparri. He's the author of Otherwise Engaged. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. I am pleased to announce a new sponsor for the HR Power Hour, Rudman Winchell Employment Attorneys, based out of Bangor, Maine. Rudman Winchell Employment Attorneys are equipped to provide a full range of legal services necessary to protect their clients' interests in this rapidly evolving world of labor and employment law. With an emphasis on client education through seminars and lunch meetings, Rudman Winchell helps keep their clients up to date on employment law in order to prevent potential conflicts. However, when contested matters do arise, Rudman Winchell Employment Attorneys work as vigorous advocates for their clients, identifying and helping them implement cost-effective solutions. From guidance in preventing claims through mediation and litigation, Rudman Winchell's committed employment and labor law attorneys serve small and large private, public, and municipal employers all around our home state of Maine, New England, and across the U.S. and Canada. Call 207-947-4501 or check them out on RudmanWinchell.com.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@HRPowerHour.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today, we are talking with John Gasparri. He's the author of Otherwise Engaged, a book that talks about how leaders can get a firmer grip on employee engagement and other key intangibles. You know, during the break, John, you and I were talking a little bit off air about some of the foundational parts of why words matter and how people have to think and communicate properly. And I said to you, I said, you've got to say that on air. So why don't you kind of set the stage as to why exactly, you know, this type of communication is critical?
Well, it's that if you the words that one uses and the messages that one sends obviously are important. There's a truism. But if we're not careful about defining our terms and being consistent about the way the words are used, we can quite unintentionally sow some confusion or maybe be sending the wrong messages. That's why, as I mentioned to you during the break, David, why I've been doing this kind of work for a long time now, for a little over 30 years, and the common denominator in all of it, or one of the common denominators, has been getting clients or coworkers to say, look, define your terms. Be really clear about what you mean and be consistent about the way you use them. Because if you haven't, what happens with this notion of engagement is because of the two definitions, the interaction connection definition and the energy effort definition, you know, the first step in solving a problem or meeting a challenge is having a clear and concise and accurate problem statement. And if the terms are wrong, then there's very little chance that the problem is going to be able to be solved, because it's going to cause noise. It's going to introduce noise into the process as opposed to signal. So I'm a real stickler, as you probably gathered, about being really careful about terms, how they're used, and making it easier for people. It's making it easier for people to understand what you're trying to say. General MacArthur said at one point that the purpose, the object, is not to give an order that can be understood. It's to give an order that cannot be misunderstood. And I think that translated into the business world, I think, it can be helpful. In fact, speaking of generals, I thought of another. General Eisenhower said that it's the leader's job, that the art of leadership is to get other people to do what you want done because they want to do it. could have said, the art of leadership is to make sure everybody's engaged, and it would have saved a few words.
Yeah, no, but he's absolutely correct. I mean, look, you know, years ago when I used to work in the retail world and certainly had many different stores in many locations over many, many different states, you know, trying to get people to do what you needed them to do by phone, because you could not be there to see that it's done correctly, and making sure that you felt confident at the end of the conversation they'd actually do what you needed to do, really did matter what you said and how you presented it and how you kept them engaged in the process. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your book, Otherwise Engaged, kind of blends a number of things in it. I like some of the real-world examples. You know, there's some fun stuffs in there, right? Talk to me a little about why you wrote the book in terms of the way you wrote it.
Well, the way I wrote the book is, if you boil it all away, the message of the book is engagement's important, you're going about it all wrong, and as a result, you might be causing some damage. That's a pretty... You can't lead with that. You can't say that directly to people because they're going to shut down as well they should. And it's also because of the nature of this that this book is about intangibles, and you can't get a firm grip on intangibles. I found it necessary. How can I draw people into the book in order to be able to tolerate some of this abstract argumentation that's in the book? And the device I hit on was I created the first half of the book alternates chapters between more straightforward essays about the subject at hand, but then every other chapter is about the adventures of the Wilson family. And I invented this silly family, the husband Matt, wife Jennifer, children Skipper and Jess. And Matt is a management consultant, and so he has decided that... he wants to apply business techniques within his family. He runs an annual FMOS, Family Member Opinion Survey. He finds that they do well on the tangible stuff like cable TV channel selection and availability of cars. They do less well on the intangibles like engagement and empowerment and so on. And so he tries to apply these techniques inside his household. Now, this is obviously a preposterous idea. Many years ago, I wrote a short article using the same sort of device. And for months thereafter, I would get phone calls and emails from people saying, did you really do this in your house? Because I wrote it in the first person. And I had to tell them, no, I didn't do it. Well, none of this stuff that the Wilsons are doing, I'm not recommending that anybody try it in their household. But the reason that I used this device was it holds up an obviously preposterous example. My hope is that people will read it, be entertained by it, and it will draw them through it, but it will also cause them to stop and think, that's a ridiculous example of what Matt just did, but it's kind of uncomfortably close to something that I've tried. So maybe I ought to think about it and think about a different way of doing this. It's an attempt to set up this easy target, but hopefully people will feel a few pangs of recognition when they read it. That's why it was written in the way it was written.
No, and I think it's well done. I really do think it's well done. I'm sorry, second half of the book. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the Wilsons only show up in the first half of the book. Second half of the book is more straightforward because the second half is more, okay, what to do about this problem. The first half is setting up the problem. The second half is what to do about it.
Do you feel that the marketplace has a lot of people talking about engagement, right? I mean, it does because it's a concern by a lot of organizations. How do you differentiate yourself in the marketplace by saying that this book provides what differently than other engagement books, other engagement speaking, other engagement talks that are out there today? What's the unique, you know, pitch?
I would say the unique pitch is saying before even beginning to put pencil to paper or finger to keyboard about doing anything about engagement, it is absolutely essential to understand what it is, what it isn't, why the, quote, incorrect definition can lead to problems. An important thing is why, if leaders have this fork in the road, they can say, I'm going to talk about engagement in terms of interaction connection, or I'm going to talk about it in terms of energy effort. Most of them go down the first fork, the interaction connection fork. One of the things to bear in mind is why that's such an attractive path. And the answer to that is, look, think of it this way. I'm going to offer you two ways to come at engagement. One, interaction connection is tangible, comfortable. There's nothing in it that, you know, it's all stuff you've done before. It's tangible, it's comfortable, it's fairly straightforward and easy, and it's pragmatic. The other path is intangible, it's going to make you uncomfortable, it's hard, and it's abstract. Well, which path do you think most people are going to want to go down? However, what I think my book does pretty clearly in ways that I haven't seen elsewhere is to say, those are the choices, and you really have to go down that more difficult path. It's part of the job. All the research on engagement says that there's two pieces to it. You need rational commitment and emotional commitment. That first path is the rational side. Well, in my experience, organizations tend to be pretty rational places most of the time. And so you don't need to influence people to want to be rational and pragmatic. You need to remind people that there's another piece to this, and it is a tougher path. But at least if you understand what it is, you understand why it's the way it is, that gives you a huge leg up in terms of working your way down that path. And the good news is at the end of the path, you realize that you don't need lots of programs and initiatives and a lot of money and a lot of permission. It really does come down to saying we need to realize that the unit of analysis should be the other person, not abstract blocks on an org chart. And if every day on the job I give due consideration to the other, I'm infusing respect into the organization. And if enough such respect gets infused into the organization, that will be a leading indicator of engagement down the road. And again, I'll emphasize that word in the definition of respect, giving due consideration. It does not mean roll over, do whatever the employee wants. To your point earlier, if it turns out that someone is just not the right person for the job, well, then the proper consideration to give that person is perhaps none. Maybe it's time for that person to go elsewhere.
We're talking with John Gasperi. He is the author of Otherwise Engaged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are having a great discussion with John Gasperi. He is the author of a new book, Otherwise Engaged, How Leaders Can Get a Firmer Grip on Employee Engagement and Other Key Intangibles. John, we've had a lot of discussion today about a lot of things in regards to your book and looking at employee engagement in kind of a different way. I know some of the audience is probably saying to themselves, who is this guy? And what kind of gives him the credibility to talk about this type of situation? So I thought I'd give you a few minutes to kind of talk a little bit about yourself and kind of talk a little bit about why you got into this and what you're trying to present in terms of this book to the audience.
Sounds like your audience has been talking to my wife. I have a kind of eclectic background. My training, I have both undergraduate and graduate degrees as an aerospace engineer, and I was an engineer for a few years. But I realized I just didn't want to do that. I did it for 4 or 5 years, and it just to the point, I didn't expect my employer to bend over backwards. I just realized this wasn't for me. And I moved on into various jobs at various companies. And in the mid-80s, I worked for a company that made inspection equipment for electronic manufacturing. And this was just when the total quality management movement hit big. And so, because we made inspection equipment, this was important to us. But I started getting immersed in the whole notion of quality, and the challenge that I heard lots and lots of leaders, and then this was in our organization, talking to customers, talking to suppliers, talking to competitors. They were saying, we know what we need to do in order to apply these TQM techniques, but how do we get our people to want to do it? How do we get buy-in? So I got intrigued by that, and I wrote a short book that tried to answer that question, and it did pretty well, and that's what kind of drew me into the consulting world, because I realized then over these past 30 years, even though my last professional position was as an employee, it was as an internal consultant, that this problem exists regardless of what the particular context is. No matter what, whatever the next big thing coming along is, there's a distinction to be made between what are the technical things we need to do and how do we get buy-in. And today we would probably phrase that, how do we ensure that people are engaged? Although, as I said earlier, I like that notion of substituting buy-in because it obviates a lot of the confusion. And so I've been doing this kind of work for about 30 years, generally trying to help people answer this same question in various contexts. So that's like how I came to write this book. In many ways, I kind of sort of had to wait until I retired to write this book because I didn't want to have to worry about offending people. Now I can kind of say what I want to say and be less concerned about that.
No, I understand. And certainly sometimes opening it up and really looking at the foundational reasons sometimes takes some courage to do that, right? And you have to be in a position to be actually able to talk about it in that particular way. You know, you talk about in your book, because I thought this was an interesting, if you want to call it, section or chapter or things that you were talking about. You talk a little bit about a mirror. Right? Mirroring.
Right.
And why don't you kind of explain that a little bit and give the audience an understanding of that?
Well, since the whole book is about intangibles, again, I know people feel frustrated. They want, what are the five things I can do to achieve higher levels of engagement? So the things, again, that I would recommend would be being really clear about the distinction between interaction, connection engagement, and energy effort engagement. Recognize that engagement is an outcome, not an input. It's the result of other things having been done well. And ultimately, there's this chain that happens of intangibles. People aren't going to be engaged if they don't feel empowered. They're not going to feel empowered if they don't feel trusted. They're not going to feel trusted if they aren't respected. If we look at it the other way around, it's respect that gets this flywheel going. So this whole notion of respect defined as giving due consideration to the other, people have said to me, well, we want a metric. So here's the metric I would recommend. And I call it the mirror test. The only investment you have to make is invest in a mirror that for every employee, and it would be hung right where they are as they leave work for the day, someplace they can't miss it. And on the mirror, it would say, did you give due consideration to the other today? And then there'd be a little form they have to fill out. It's a yes-no question. And then you add all that up, and then you have your metric. And the reason for a mirror is that the answer to that question, sorry if this sounds a little soft and squishy, the answer to that question, only you can know if you look yourself in the eye and you know in your heart, did I truly give due consideration to the other? If you can do that, if you can get people thinking that way, recognizing that engagement is the goal we want to get to, but by infusing large doses of respect throughout the organization by everyone, it's a reciprocal agreement, throughout the day, giving due consideration to the other, the yes answers to the mirror test will begin to go up, and down the road you will see that engagement levels will go up as well.
No, it certainly will. And, you know, I got to tell you, one of the things that I really liked about this whole concept is the simplicity of it and the fact that it really is doable for organizations as they keep thinking exactly about what they need to do to make this happen. When you were putting this and finalizing all this up as we end the show today, would you say that if, on a scale of 1 to 10 or however you want to define it, how hard is it to implement these type of things in your organization?
It is... It's hard because it means changing mindsets. There's no question about it. I wish I could say, oh, it's simple, but it's not easy. right? It's, I do think it comes down to giving due consent. There's a difference between simplicity and ease. It's not complicated, but it's very, very hard to do. It requires clarity. It requires diligence. It requires vigilance. And that's just hard to do day in, day out. There's a lot of things pulling you in the other direction. But the fact that something hard is, that something is hard doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And if one truly wants to achieve engagement, I think you have to meet this head on. But as you said earlier, you realize this isn't anything that, you know, this is something literally you've been taught all your lives by your parents and your teachers and your clergy or whoever, your mentors. Stop and think, give due consideration to the other, and as an individual, you will be better off, and collectively, the organization will be better off. And lo and behold, those engagement levels will tick up.
You're absolutely right, and I really want to thank you today for being on the show. You know, I think you've given some really good definitions that are simple and easy for people to understand, and I think you provided some good insight for organizations who really want to continue to look at how they can improve their organizations and their, you know, their engagement in terms of making sure that both sides, employer and employees, are fully engaged. Obviously, if anybody is interested in listening to you again, they can go to hrpowerhour.com and make sure that they can listen to this show. Your information, your LinkedIn contact, your email and everything will be there. Of course, if they go to Amazon, right, you want them to buy the book.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. The ebook is available as well. So yes, Amazon and all the usual suspects have it available.
All the usual suspects. We can make that happen. And I want to thank this usual suspect for being on the show. John, I do appreciate it. You have a great book, Otherwise Engaged. And I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB. And now your HR tip of the week. According to the article titled Employee Digital Privacy Rights, What Can Employers Monitor? On TrendHR.com, employers can monitor nearly any type of digital communications made by employees on company-owned systems as long as there is a legitimate business reason for doing so. And the employees don't have any reason to expect privacy. Here are some examples. Company email. Company internet access. Keystrokes, screenshots, electronic files, some telephone activities, including voicemails, texts, photos, videos, GPS location data from the phone, apps usage, also video surveillance, the location if you have vehicles with GPS, mail that may come into the office that is not personal or confidential in nature, and certainly any public social media updates. So keep in mind, when you're doing business, it's just business. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're bringing back a great guest. Her name is Jean Paquette, and she is the commissioner for the Maine Department of Labor. She's going to be giving us an update of what's going on in 2015 at the DOL. We're going to be talking about unemployment. There's been a big ribbon commission from the U.S. Department of Labor, and we're going to find out about those findings. A lot more information. Listen to the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.